Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast, where we talk to foresters about how they are using digital technologies in their day-to-day forestry work. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Marco Gasek. He's the Vice President of Information Technology and Planning at Mosaic Forest Management Corporation. Marco, how are you doing today?
Good, Kevin.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
For sure. Good to see you. Good to see you. So I think this will be a fun one because you're at the executive level at Mosaic. And we don't often get, you know, VPs coming onto the podcast. So I think your insights and your stories are going to be really interesting to our audience. Even though we've known each other for several years, I actually have some burning questions because I looked at your LinkedIn profile and other materials. I was like, actually, I don't know these answers about Marco, and I should know them after this many years. But maybe to start things off, you're not a trained forester like myself. There's nothing wrong with that. But I believe you studied at Simon Fraser University in an engineering field. But maybe tell us about how you got your start in this world of IT / forestry / printers, maybe even.
Yeah, that's a great question, Kevin. And I don't know if I have the honor of being the only non-forester on this podcast, but in any case, it's very much appreciated. I did my undergrad at SFU in systems engineering. It's a combination of electrical and mechanical. And for the better part of 6 years, I believe, I worked for a Dutch company at the time that had an office in Richmond, BC, making large format inkjet printers. So when you're walking in the mall next time and there's a big billboard advertisement, it was probably printed out on one of the printers that we worked on. So it was an interesting career, very technical in R&D. And then, at some point I decided if I didn't want to spend the rest of my life designing printers, I'd have to branch out a little bit. And I did my MBA at UBC. And after that, got into management consulting for a couple of years. And that's how I ended up working for the predecessor of Mosaic, Timber West at the time. And back in 2015, I joined full time. That was my intro to forestry.
Yeah, very cool. And I believe somewhere in there, you did a bit of work with the Deloitte big engine before kind of going that route.
Oh, I did. Yeah, that was the management consulting stint. It was 2 years. It was very interesting. It kind of gives you exposure to a lot of different industries and challenges that people face, and also lets you have mini test drives at a bunch of different companies that you might be interested in working for. So that worked out well for me.
Yeah. So thinking of that transition to Mosaic, was that maybe, working for some of those other companies or getting exposed to them that created an interest, or was it the network? Everyone says network, somebody knew you and your capabilities and thought, oh, gee whiz, Mark will be a great fit for Mosaic. But how did that come about, I guess?
Yeah, I think I just got very lucky in a sense, I guess. I didn't have any prior contact. It was just at Timber West at the time, new CEO came in, Jeff Zweig, who I believe you know. And he'd hired Deloitte to do a business review, identify opportunities. I was fortunate enough to be part of the project team, came in cold. I had no knowledge of forestry whatsoever. So really drinking from a fire hose. And ultimately for me, it was the people at the company were just an outstanding team. I really enjoyed working with them. That's really the main reason why I decided to stick with the company. And since then, it's just been a very exciting and interesting journey. I have to admit that I certainly did not appreciate the level of complexity and thought that goes into running a timberlands management business. That naively you could think it's a simple business, but there really is a lot going on, from science and technology to community relations and finance. Kind of covers the basis of your MBA for sure.
Cool. And I'm sure we'll get into the various complexity factors or stories there. But before we leave the printing side, I something I came across, and I don't know if it was the All In Pod that we listened to, or maybe it was something I read. But HP was proposing a subscription based model where you can rent printers and inks, and they would like send you stuff monthly. And I know you designed, at the engineering level stuff, like maybe less the business of printing, but because you spent that time in the space, I'm just curious, kind of on an off tangent, what do you think about that? Like, do you think that even makes sense, like having a subscription to rent printers for use?
Well, what is it? BMW is willing to rent you a subscription to turn on your heated seat feature in your car, which is a thing in Europe, I understand. I think just everybody's trying to figure out how to get to that recurring revenue model and subscription-based business. So I haven't heard about that HP, business model out there, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Everybody seems to be looking for an angle to do that.
Yeah. And for our audience here wondering, why is Kevin peppering Marco from these left field questions? Marco and I know each other well, and I know Marco's a think outside the box type of guy, so I know I can bombard him with these things left, right, center, and he'll keep up. Now, most people
Welcome
do.
anytime, Kevin.
Yeah, for sure. Now, thinking of the MBA, it's like what was that, just like a natural progression of thinking, I want to learn more about business administration, or was there some event, life event that pushed you down that route?
Combination of the two, I'd say. I've always had an interest in business and strategy and finance, and I got involved in that a little bit sort of towards the end of my tenure with Canon at the time. I did go to work for Bosch for a couple of years after that, and unceremoniously the office that I worked for got shut down, so I had a choice of either moving to the Netherlands or doing something else in my life, and I thought it was a good opportunity to do the MBA. Really glad I did. I made great friends, learned a lot. It's a great fit for somebody who doesn't have a background in business. So, just something that in retrospect really seemed like the right move for me. I'm certainly glad I did it.
Right. And maybe one last academic level question, I guess. You also do have a CFA, I believe, Chartered Financial Accountant. Did I get that title right?
Chartered financial analyst, yeah.
Analyst, that's it, not accountant, analyst.
Yeah.
And my understanding, those are rigorous tests, from people I talk to. Like, they're not ones you just sign up for on a weekend and then, on Monday you show up and write it and you pass and get bell curved or something. They're really rigorous. From what I've heard. But where did that maybe interest come from? Is that just like a progression of, doing the MBA, learning more about business strategy and business, and you just wanted to sharpen those knives, I guess?
That has a really funny that question is a funny answer to it, and I promise we didn't coordinate on this ahead of time, but since you asked, so I've been doing my MBA, a few years before that I started dating a girl who's now my wife, and it just so happened that she's in finance. As I was going through my MBA, she was doing her CFA, and after I graduated, my partner was spending a lot of time studying for this thing, and I kind of got curious about it. So I figured, well, I might as well do it too. So that's kind of what got me down the path of CFA. And you're right, it is rigorous. It's a lot of work. I found it super interesting. I don't directly put it to use in my current job, although elements, we do deal with valuation of the company. And it's very, very useful to be able to speak the language of finance, which I think applies to any organization, any industry. As you keep, progressing in your career, you have to understand the lifeblood of business, right? So
For sure, for sure. Well, I hope you and your wife's wedding anniversary, it doesn't match your accreditation or passing day, because that would be super funny actually if that was the case. But
it doesn't, luckily.
good stuff, good stuff. So thinking of Mosaic in general, for those listeners maybe who don't know who Mosaic is, can you introduce us to the company and who they are and what they do?
Sure. So Mosaic Forest Management is a timberlands management company. It's the result 5 years ago, Timber West and Island Timberlands affiliated. So basically, the two companies still exist as legal entities, but it's one team managing the assets. So we manage about 575,000 hectares of private land, almost exclusively on Vancouver Island. And the company's owned by two of Canada's large pension funds. So our business involves really, managing the forest. We hire contractors for the most part to harvest the trees, although we do have a crew. And we sell the timber to domestic and international customers. That's really the business. We also have a real estate development arm and sort of, exploring other ways to make the best use of the land that we have.
Very cool, very cool. And for those who haven't visited Vancouver Island or maybe West Coast in general, you should go. It's gorgeous, beautiful territory. And thinking of your role, I know you have vice president level, information technology and planning. But for maybe the lay person and the scope, when I hear that, I think of like this is a pretty broad, IT information technology in general is quite all encompassing. Plus planning. And I think previously you're leading business process improvement type of initiatives and projects. So pretty broad in general and complex, I assume, projects in general. But what's your mandate, I guess, given the current maybe markets and political climate and whatnot? Is your work scope more maybe systems based, or is it really intertwined with the rest of the business and all things being driving factors or influencing factors?
I mean, it has to be the latter, right? Like we all, the executive team works together to solve the pressing business challenges at the time, and certainly, policy factors and the markets play into it in a big way. But the scope of my role, so I cover our forest inventory and estate planning group. So that's your timber supply analysis. Also got the GIS team. And business information services, which is the corporate IT, I suppose. And in addition, you mentioned the business improvement, business innovation. Still have that as part of my portfolio. So it is broad, and there's a lot of different sort of moving pieces there. But technology is a common theme that runs through it. We've had an opportunity to do some pretty neat stuff over the years, as you know, Kevin.
Yeah, for sure. And so maybe thinking of that, I've got a series of project questions because I'm curious to really know your thoughts on them. So there is a statistic out there, and it probably varies, but anywhere from 70% or 85% or 90%, again, whatever it is, who knows? But some number, a high percent of IT related projects generally fail. And I'm just curious before we dive into maybe some cool projects, does that statistic resonate with you in your seat and your role? Or is it different maybe in a forestry company that percentage is lower, or is it more risky, or is it hogwash from your seat that it depends?
No, I've heard similar statistics as well, Kevin. I'd like to think we're batting higher than 10% success rate. But look, I think the way I think about it is it all comes down to a portfolio of projects. And on the one side, you're going to have implementation projects where you're implementing a new ERP system or some well-understood technology, and those require discipline and thorough planning. But I think if done right, the success rate on those is and should be high. And then there's going to be a segment of your portfolio, which is innovation and R&D, where you're consciously making the decision to take on more risk. And the expectation for those is certainly that they're not all going to be winners, because you're taking the risk. You're trying to see what works. With the project we worked on together, in some respects, falls into that category. You're really in uncharted waters to some extent. So it's about structuring your R&D portfolio and your technology portfolio to have the right balance between, bread and butter implementation project versus the R&D. And so I don't know what to come back to your statistics, what the right number is there, but not everything is going to be success, and I think that's okay.
Right. Makes sense. Makes sense. And so thinking of when you started this journey in forestry and working on business improvement projects and other IT even to more currently, maybe before I get you to pick maybe a project you really like or were surprised, has the landscape changed in the time? Because you'll be, I think, close to like a decade at some point in your role. But maybe you can, do you have any thoughts on how the technology landscape has changed, or has it not changed as much and it's more the sector catching up? But what are your thoughts on there, given your experiences, your deep experience in this space to date? What trends have you seen?
Yeah, that's another good question. I think maybe it's a bit of both, the industry kind of catching up and the technology changing as well. Just to give you an idea of the latter, when we, when I started off 10 years ago, and we started having discussions about precision forestry and, where do we take it, the one roadblock that immediately came up was this, the communication issue. How are we going to exchange data? And over the last few years, with Starlink and the like, the low Earth orbit satellites, that seems to be kind of going away. That issue seems to be melting away, and it's enabling a lot of things, right? So for sure, technology has been changing. We've both worked a lot with LiDAR and inventory and remote sensing, and it feels like that's matured a lot over the last 10 years. Whereas when I started, there was a lot of skeptics about that, this LiDAR thing. It's kind of out there, but is it real or not? Do we believe it? And I feel the conversation in the industry has really shifted over the last 10 years. It's becoming accepted as the industry standard and best practice, frankly. So that's changed. And then, internally with the industry, I think there's been, over the last 10 years, quite a generational shift. I think a lot of new people coming into the industry, bringing a different skill set, that they haven't done things the same way for decades, right? So willingness to try out new ways of doing things, and I think that's played a factor in it too. So both sources of important change over the last decade or so.
So thinking of maybe the in-field communication side and the LiDAR and the inventory and other aspects, are there certain areas in your seat as an executive you're feeling like are still missing? Maybe that whole last mile thing, like they're good, but you know what, gee whiz, if we can do these extra things, are there examples you can share in terms of what you're thinking about looking out in the short term that you want to close the gap a little bit further on some of those technologies or initiatives or projects?
I kind of feel that with the fundamental or foundational technology, we're kind of getting there. It feels like, a lot of these enabling technologies have been in the works or in development for the better part of the last 10 years, and it kind of feels like they're reaching a level of maturity where we can really do some practical, tangible things with them now. So I think for a lot of those, it's now the work is now on us as an industry to stitch together the systems to produce the results. Case in point being, the FMC platform we've been working on. All the puzzle pieces are in place, and now it's on the likes of, us and Lind Geomatics to build products that work and deliver that value. I think there's always going to be a last mile. When I think of technologies that everybody talks about that don't feel like they're quite there, for example, I talk a lot about self-driving cars, talk to people about automated machinery. That's one area where, maybe I'll be proven wrong. Hopefully, I'll be proven wrong, but I think those are still further away than a lot of people think. I think there's some really big challenges, both in terms of technology as well as market dynamics. Just to give you an example, you look at autonomous trucks. Well, they're not on our roads yet, on the highways. That problem hasn't been solved after, I believe, the latest statistics was $100 billion US invested in autonomous vehicles, and they haven't cracked the nut really for commercial on highway trucking. And Forestry involves a whole different set of complexities. You've got a mix of public and private roads. You've got, off-center loads and center of gravity's high, so vehicle dynamics are different. They're driving on forest roads without painted signal lines or traffic lights. In addition to solving the highway driving, you've got to solve that. And you're operating in a market that's much smaller than the commercial trucking market, right? So who's going to invest the money to solve a more difficult problem for a smaller market share? And I think that's going to be a pretty significant challenge to getting sort of that next level out of technology that a lot of people are expecting. So
Yeah, and
all
that's
that to say, some great opportunities for us that are ready to be actioned, and also some stuff that I think is further out.
yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because I think as a whole in the forestry, the sector as a whole, they again, I've seen it multiple times where there's something new and shiny and people inherently gravitate to it, and then the kind of fizzes out, and then after a couple of years, it's this new thing. But you touch on an interesting point when you bring up the autonomous trucks and the highways and the logging roads or off highways, and I think it's interesting in the sense that the layperson may think that, hey, if we crack the highways, then by default, the logging side or the commercial forestry side should be easier. And I think what you described is, well, actually do that first, and then we've got a whole nother problem set that probably is equally, or if not more complicated than the mainstream use case. Do you think that's something folks don't appreciate maybe as they think about forestry and they just think of it, yeah, it's easy peasy, nuts and bolts, but maybe it's way more complex than everyone thinks.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think so. That's been my view. I think that there's an engineering complexity to solving that problem. And then in addition to that, you have the market dynamics and the interplay of those two, I think, makes for a really, really tough problem. I don't know, different people have different views. I certainly know some people sort of approach it with like, well, you're not, if you're not driving on public roads, you don't have the regulation to contend to as much of a deep, and that's true. But I think fundamentally, if you're going to really crack the nut for forestry autonomous vehicles, you do have to solve both of the problems, which makes it extra hard.
So we're kind of talking maybe a little bit about further technology. And I think it's interesting, again, given your seat and your role. I know you're always thinking on multiple parallel streams and different time horizons just as a function of being an executive. And so maybe if we kind of go backwards a little bit in this pod, we'll start maybe future thinking and then bring it back to maybe more current projects or use cases. But we touched on autonomous trucking. Are there any other technologies that you're kind of keeping your eye out in the not so distant future that maybe you're thinking with a bit of Marco magic and mosaic magic we can bring this earlier or sooner in the timeline? What are some of those technologies that you're thinking about today?
Yeah, first of all, I'll say that the magic is all in my team. I'm very fortunate to have an exceptionally talented team that makes all this stuff a reality. But the one sort of set of projects, if you will, that I've been very excited about for Mosaic, that I think we're getting very close to fully realizing, is what we've been referring to as to end-to-end harvest planning systems. So, if you imagine a planning system or planning scope for a forestry company, it starts with very long-term strategic planning, timber supply analysis. You're looking at 150-year plus horizon, and then progressively step down to tactical planning, 10-year horizon, operational planning, and eventually execution on the ground. We've outlined a vision for how we want to implement that system. And over the last few years, we've built out sort of both ends, right? We've got the strategic planning. We use RemSoft's Woodstock platform for that. Very recently, we launched a 10-year spatial harvest plan, which has been really exciting. We've been able to use, again, Woodstock as the platform, but create a fully spatial system that's context aware and able to manage things like ECAs and other sort of very spatial constraints to basically produce 10 years worth of laid out blocks on a map, which has been really, quite an interesting development. I think it's going to go a long way. And then on the other side of the time horizon, I guess we had another super interesting project, which was, we call it the computer-assisted log manufacturing. We're enabling our processors, mechanical processors, to use the onboard value optimization technology. We've gone from printing out bucking cards and manually distributing those, although in some cases we still do. But the reality is we can now, we can have a quality control supervisor sitting in an office. They create their bucking specification and they upload it via satellite. The operator receives it, enables it. So we've really kind of closed that execution control loop, if you will, from the office to the field. And I think, the most exciting thing on the horizon for me over the next couple of years is to marry those two up. So we have strategic, tactical, operational planning. We've got execution, and in the middle, where we see going with it is landscape level bucking optimization. So using the advanced inventory to simulate a tree list on every stand, and then through simulation and optimization, determine the optimal bucking pattern for each block in the forest to satisfy customer requirements. Generate a list of manufacturing prescriptions and upload those into processors. I think it's pretty exciting place where we're
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think a lot of
going.
folks who listen to this, and again, the audience are distributed globally, are probably gonna pause maybe, and maybe as they're driving or running or working out listening to this pod, they're probably gonna pause and go, wow, I need to rewind this, what Marco just said, like 30 seconds or a minute there to re-listen to what you said, because these are pretty advanced projects that there's some companies out there that are just trying to get off the ground, with leveraging LiDAR and inventory. And what you described is truthfully like next level, if I'm being honest with you, in terms of innovation and putting that into practice to drive your business. And so thinking of the audience that are maybe listening, because there's a few out there that are probably going to say, ah, oh, yeah, it's another executive, just talking about his dreams and aspirations, but we got to do this work. A lot of these things are already in flight, rolled out operationally in the Mosaic business. But for those who say, like this is impossible, or, there's always a camp of people like, no, this is too complicated, we can't do that. What's your advice to them from your seat as an executive pushing these initiatives through the organization to realize success? Is there a secret magic recipe you've kind of landed upon, whether it's from the planning stage or the execution, or is there some magic to how you're making this work for Mosaic?
There's no magic. I mean, there's always going to be people who believe it's impossible. And I think everybody comes from a good place. I think that people are correct that this is a very complex problem, and a lot of people have been working on it for a long time. But even in my 10 years, I've had specific examples where, that there have been problems that are unsolvable. You'll never get that. There's all these kinds of barriers why it's not going to work, and we've solved it. One specific example is when we started down this path of computer-assisted log manufacturing, just the idea of beaming files via satellite into processors and getting data back. It's like, ah, you're never going to get the satellites working reliably. You've got forest cover, you've got all kinds of aspect issues you can be cutting out. And well, we just tried it and it works great. So, and in terms of, the system I described, the way I look at it is, look, we've defined a vision, we've broken it down into a bunch of discrete projects. Each one of those projects stands on its own. It delivers value. If we get it right, we're going to be better off. If we can stitch it all together, that's great. That's going to give us, that next level of performance. But we're attacking each problem discreetly. We break it down. We identify, hey, what has technical risk? What hasn't been done before. We try to address those, and we move on, and you learn as you go. So I'm optimistic that we'll get there. I don't really know what else to say in response to that, other than at least we have a vision that we're working towards. If you don't have a vision, where are you going to go?
There you go. Pro tip from Marco Gasek. Start with a vision, everyone, and then you got something to everyone to hang their sink their nails into or their teeth to start a conversation there. That's very cool. And so, as I think about, there's a couple of maybe rapid fire questions I'm dying to pepper you with. It's just kind of fun. I get to pepper you with like nonstop things and see how you hold up and you see if you sweat at all. But rapid fire question. Cloud versus on-premise IT. Does it matter? Do you care in your seat? Or is it more, you be you, whatever makes sense for the organization, or do you see a certain trend coming or shaping up?
Good one. Cost, it's big question. Moving everything to cloud seems great, but it costs a lot of money, and we have to be aware of that, and do the right blend. I think as we start to use AI tools more and build out the ecosystem of AI tool sets that are available online, those really kind of lend themselves to cloud-based implementations and cloud-based data storage. So we'll, as those applications develop, we'll have to decide what the right balance of on cloud versus on-premise. But right now, cost is certainly an element that we look at.
Right. When we think about open source GIS or really open source anything, I guess technology, again, in your seat with IT, you deal with, although GIS is part of your mandate, you deal with all sorts of technologies, but open source versus closed source or commercial software, is it the right question? Is it the right debate, or is it depends, or do you have any views on that?
I guess if we were starting out from scratch, it would be an interesting sort of debate to have. The reality is that, when you're running an enterprise, the switching costs are very high, right? Like we're built into the Esri ecosystem, as are many others, right? And to go away from that is really a humongous undertaking. So I don't see any immediate switches to an open source GIS platform anytime soon.
Right, makes sense. And so when we think about remote sensing, we kind of touched on LiDAR in general, but every 10 years or so, there's this hype cycle where radar starts getting bounced around, or we come back to photogrammetric techniques about structure from motion or all sorts of stuff. And you worked in the security space, and again, engineer by background. Is there something about remote sensing that excites you, or do you think when you're looking across a landscape of the Earth observation space, or maybe even the airborne space, that the ingredients you need to bake that marvelous chocolate cake, you've already got them. There's nothing else you need. Or is there something that gee whiz, if Marco could have it for Mosaic, it would enable these other initiatives or advance the vision? Is there something about the Earth observation space or remote sensing space that excites you, or?
I'm quite excited by the work we're doing. Like I might have mentioned, we just rolled out a new inventory across the Mosaic land base. So David Dixon and his team did a great job of stitching that together. And it's a multi-source inventory. So it combines LiDAR, aerial photography, CIR imagery, and really kind of stitching those sets of data together through some very innovative techniques, including machine learning, basically segmentation of the land base into micro stands that are less than a hectare in size. That's allowing us to get a much better inventory than we have had in the past through remote sensing techniques that are mature and exist today. As far as stuff that's out there on the horizon or still in development, I think there's going to be a lot of value to having that temporal component where you can get a high resolution updated quickly to get changes and disturbance. And I know that there's some solutions out there to do that right now, but it really kind of comes down to that cost benefit assessment, right? Like they can be quite pricey, and you know what you get for them, maybe we haven't quite figured out how to monetize yet, but I'm sure there's potential there.
For sure. And I think as I think about like the audience, I can already feel like the questions. No, there's no live streaming chat where people can punch in questions as we do these recordings. But I know I can feel people thinking, ask him, I want to know, dying to know. But for Mosaic and using LiDAR as an example, has the company settled on a revisit frequency, such as, you know, we're going to do this 10 years, or is it still, well, we're still figuring that out, and it depends.
Yeah, we don't have, you know, I don't have a number of years as a, you know, line in the sand. We're going to do it every 5 or 10 years. It's really, you know, a combination of looking at how the technologies is evolving, new sensors, cost again. And then, you know, like I said, we just redid our inventory. So we're in the middle of, you know, really kind of refining how we grow that inventory out. And we're going to have, you know, ground sampling to see how we're tracking to that. So, you know, depending on that, we'll make a decision about when to refly.
Right, TBD, makes
Yeah.
sense. Absolutely. So we touched briefly on AI, and I know past conversations with you, I know that, well, in mainstream, right, there's some folks that are like, oh, AI is going to replace all our jobs, and then I don't know if you don't see autonomous trucks coming anytime soon. I'm not sure if you see the humanoid logger, AI-powered humanoid logger coming out anytime soon. But thinking of AI, how does that, because it's such a fast-paced space, how do you process that information as an executive to inform which projects you initiate as an organization? So maybe that's the first question. And the tag along then would be, you know, when we think about AI, we have our usual, you know, machine learning, we've got a deep learning, but you and I both know once you go into the weeds, like it's a whole space by itself and it's crazy. But what does AI ultimately mean to you, and where would you wanna take it? So I guess a two-part question there for you.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a good question, very timely. We're having a lot of discussions internally and with our board about AI and how Mosaic thinks about AI. So, you know, you're right. There's a lot out there. There's a lot of great science and great progress being made. There's also a lot of hype out there. So our strategy is to stay grounded and practical. And like you said, you know, you hear about AI in the media, and it's all about LLMs and, you know, chat bots and how's that, you know, AGI and how's that going to change things. But reality is we think of it like a toolbox. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen the classic, you know, the flower petal diagram of machine learning techniques, and you've got, you know, reinforcement learning versus, you know, supervised learning, and kind of you break those down into their different categories. So we think of it as a toolbox, and we're using the appropriate tools for different problems. You know, just to give you an example, we have a trial right now with the FP Innovations FP Sylvie platform. They basically combine drone imagery with machine learning to identify, or basically to come up with silviculture surveys and like free to grows and all those kinds of things. So, you know, that is an example of image classification. It's a very well-defined subsegment of machine learning. And then, you know, we've talked about where we take the FMC project and looking at having a database of hundreds of thousands of machine work logs and using those to predict the effort to log the next harvest block, right? So those are all discrete problems that use different facets of the machine learning ecosystem that we can tackle. But where the how we think about the you know the AGI and ChatGPTs, we're playing with it for sure. We're exploring it. We've got little, you know, we've carved off tiny little projects. Like, hey, you know, can we try and figure out how to help our market analysts do a market wrap, you know, a little bit quicker, and let let that person focus their time on other things, right? So those are the kinds of things we're exploring with ChatGPT. I forgot the if I've answered your initial question, but that's kind of a thought on the general AI landscape right now within Mosaic.
Yeah, for sure. No, you did. And just for our audience, you know, Marco talks about LLM, so large language models. When you're doing a ChatGPT or any of those things, you know, they've heard about mainstream, that's where that space is, and the AGI, the artificial general intelligence. You know, we're gonna be ruled by Teledyne from Terminator at some point imminently. I'm not convinced personally, as we think about singularity, that we're that close, because I think it's telling when you talk about like these tools, you know, coming from your engineering background, my own background. I remember coding a neural network way back in the day that was still technically artificial intelligence, just minus the glitz and glamour that it actually has now. And so fascinating insights on that. And it's interesting to hear, you know, from the LLM side, you're trying to use that within the business to in a different way, maybe not from a inventory side of things, but more of a analyst or analytical point of view. And just for disclosure for our audience, you know, Marco's mentioned the FMC quite a few times. So that's the Forest Machine Connectivity projects. That's something Marco, Mosaic, and the LIM Geomatics team we worked on, and we can talk more about that later on. But just as disclosure, that's a project between us that we executed. It was a labor of love, but great outcomes in the end. And so thinking of the AI side, I've just got one more question on there. Just to we talked about the autonomous trucking, but you know, we always had the Boston Dynamics dogs bouncing around doing flips, and then drones. So, you know, we talked about EO, remote sensing, and that didn't come up. And then just in that last conversation, you mentioned the FP Innovation Sylvie project you're doing with drones and whatnot. Is drones just another toolkit, you know, for you? Is that how you view it? That it's just another, it's a different platform for remote sensing measurements. And beyond that, not much more to say about that.
You know, I don't want to come off as, you know, not being enthusiastic. I think it's a great tool, but ultimately, yeah, it's another tool in the toolbox, right? It's you know, we've had a drone program at Mosaic for a number of years now, and there's certainly been challenges, both like, you know, regulatory and having to get your drone operator's license, and if you're going by the book, every time you go and fly, you have to have a flight plan and all. And I recognize those rules are changing now, and they're adapting. But you know, there's been barriers, and we're learning how to make the best use of that. So yeah, I guess, do I see drones as being some wildly transformational tool that's going to totally change how we do every aspect of our business in, you know, the next few years? No, it's probably going to be a gradual evolution and figure out how to make best use of them.
For sure, for sure. Absolutely. And so when I think about these projects you've described, they're fascinating. And some of them I knew about, some of them I didn't. So that's why I say they're fascinating. There's two things going through my mind. One is, you know, Mosaic's an innovative company, Marco Gasek in charge of this. He's the champion, the executive champion for these ideas. And yet there's a lot of companies that haven't scratched the surface in terms of some of the things, the art of the possible today. And one of the, I think earlier in one of your comments, it was, you know, highlighting all the reasons we couldn't do something. And then you were like, yeah, let's just do it. And we did it and it worked, you know. And it seems like at times the forestry community were good at identifying all the reasons we shouldn't do something versus maybe just trying it. But one of the things that always comes up are the contractor workforce. Oh, you know, they're never going to buy in, or who's paying it from a cost point of view, et cetera. Are there any successes that you've kind of figured out or cracked that nut in terms of how to get contractor engagement or contractor buy-in or contractor adoption, or just getting them on board with what you're doing? Are there any pro tips that you'd be able to share on that front with the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main one is treat your contractors with respect and listen to the good advice they have to give you, right? Like, these are people who are out there in the field every day. I'm not. They know, you know, practically speaking, on the ground, what works and what doesn't work. And you know, there's been, for example, our processor head project. It didn't get off the ground smoothly. We definitely had fits and starts with that one. But ultimately, we landed on a very successful project. Adoption's been high. The feedback we get from operators has been good. And really, that's come about as a result of working very closely with operators, involving them in the process early, and taking that feedback and really actioning and making changes as a result of what we hear from contractors. So we really see contractors as partners in this, and all of these technological projects that that they're going to succeed if they deliver benefit to both Mosaic and the contractors. And I think just about everything that we do does, and the success is getting people to understand that and working together to make it better for the entire, forestry community.
Right. Makes sense. And you'd mentioned at the start with Mosaic's land base, like predominantly private land. Do you think if you're dealing with public land, some of the technology ventures that you've undertaken would have been easier, or do you think they'd be harder with that public lease? Or do you think it doesn't really matter? Same players, you got a forestry company, an integrated forest products company, you got contractors. It's back to your point, treat everyone with respect and realize value and benefit for everyone. And that's the secret recipe. Do you think public private land makes a difference?
I do think it makes a difference. I think it really kind of depends on what technology specifically you're talking about. And I'll give you an example of why. I described our end-to-end harvest planning process. I think it would have been very challenging to, see that through to the end in a public setting, because the incentive isn't there. If you don't have, control, and you know that you're going to be managing this land base for the next 100 years, why would you go through the trouble of stitching together that kind of a system, right? So I think incentives matter.
Very interesting point. Never thought of it from that point of view. There's one more technology piece, I guess. I'm actually curious to know your thoughts again. And see, this is fun. Marco's probably thinking like, I didn't sign up to be peppered by you for an hour, but hey, here we are. But crypto and blockchains, does that mean anything to in your seat as you look out and do we ultimately put trees on a blockchain and transact on the blockchain globally? Any thoughts, thinkings, or opinions on that space?
I have a bit of a, I think, what's a contrarian view on blockchain in general, but I've been proven with Bitcoin trading at $100,000 here, so proven wrong. But yeah, I don't know. We've had a few conversations about that, Kevin. I have to admit, I haven't quite wrapped my head around exactly, practically what exactly does that mean. So, lots of conversation about it. I'm not seeing it, to be totally truthful, right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think lots of folks are still having many conversations on trying to figure out what that means for them personally and professionally. And so as you think, maybe some lighter questions. I'm just curious in your career working in the forestry space as a technical person, what's your fondest memory so far? Is there a project that you went through, not to kind of have to pick a favorite kid or child or anything, but is there a moment in your career where you're just like, wow, that was really, really cool, that just makes you smile when you think about that journey in forestry? And if so, what would that be?
There's a lot of, good memories from different projects in different ways. The processor project I described was it was significant. It was kind of the first big major transformational project we did, and because there were, ups and downs, kind of by the time we succeeded with it and got to the end of it, you can look back and, some great learnings out of that, and really just a good lesson that perseverance matters, and it's important to, stick with your conviction and see it through to the end, even if it doesn't work the first time around. So that one stands out a little bit, Kevin. But then, you know, a number of other are, like you mentioned, our FMC project is a great one. We're obviously, you know, through the project phase, but lots of work to be done yet there.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think when we undertake any of these initiatives, it's not like that finish line is, you know, you hit it and then that's it. Take the foot off the pedal, if anything. It's a new journey that you're signing up for. One question I always ask people on this podcast is around the workforce, and the only reason I ask it, I know some people have provided me feedback and said, "You always ask this. Why do you always ask this?" And one of the reasons I ask it is when I go out, you know, I gotta head to travel. Well, tonight somewhere to give a talk. And as I look at the room, it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm getting old or something, but like I see a change in not just more women in the room, different folks of color, et cetera. But I do see this something happening. So I'm curious in your seat, when we think about forestry, how much of that generational workforce change are you seeing? And does that translate to new opportunities, or is it still some of the issues around, you know, finding the right people for maybe the right seat or doing the right work is one that is challenging for Mosaic as well, no different than any other company. But what does the workforce mean for you and the generational change?
Well, the workforce means everything to us. And I tend to agree with you, Kevin. I feel like over the last decade, it's got a different flavor to it. You know, I look around our company now and it doesn't look the same that it did 10 years ago. And it's both from the, you know, the diversity perspective, number of women in leadership positions, and also the age. I think the average age has gone down quite a bit, it feels like. And it's great, right? Like you're getting fresh perspectives, you're getting a new set of talent, new set of skills into the industry. And you know, you asked me earlier about the, you know, technology change and how things have matured over the last 10 years, and they have in a big way. And I think it's in large part thanks to you know, to the workforce that we're privileged to have. So yeah, hugely important, seeing some very positive shifts, and you know, but lots of work to do still.
For sure. So I promise you, I would have you in and out in an hour because I know you're a super busy guy. But I got one more question. I promise this is my last question. So you and I both listen to the All In podcast. So for those who don't know, it's a highly entertaining commentary on current events or facts. Who's your favorite person on that podcast, and
Oh, that's
why? And I'll tell you who mine is.
I'm gonna have to say Freeberg, and you know, I've got a soft spot for science, and he's the, you know, the technical guy that brings the facts and, you know, kind of unbiased analysis there. The other guys are great, but they seem to come from, you know, first establish a position and then justify it versus laying out the facts. So and he's doing some very cool stuff with his ag project and the genome thing. You know, there's some real, you know, transformational potential there. So Freeberg's gonna be my answer.
Freeberg is your vote. So that's
Yeah.
funny. I should have made a bet with, I was talking to somebody. I'm like, we should bet. I'm going to ask Marco this question. And I think it's Freeberg. And so for those who haven't listened to it, it's like, check him out. It's a podcast. It's highly entertaining. Mine's Jay Cal. He always gets picked on by all the three, and his just remarks and his impersonations just makes me laugh when I'm in the morning gym at some gun ungodly hour trying to pump iron. Just makes me bust out laughing. So it sets the day for me. So hey man, I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and I know we've been trying to get this going for a little bit of time, so definitely appreciate you carving out some time. And so as we look to wind down, for folks I'm hoping who are listening to this are going to go like, wow, I want to learn more, I want to talk more with Marco to the extent that he's available, what's the best way for folks to reach you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Marco Gasek at Mosaic Forest Management. Just shoot me a message and happy to connect.
Yeah, awesome. There you go, folks. So if you want to find Marco, check him out on LinkedIn, reach out, and I'm sure he's got lots of other cool ideas up there that he's got getting ready and planned to roll out. So hey, thanks so much for your time, and I'm looking forward to seeing you whenever that next time is, and all the best.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate the opportunity.